This call is...
Hello, everyone.
Hi there.
Hello.
This is Ram. Let's give folks a couple of minutes to join up. Who's on the line now?
Stannis here.
This is Nathan.
Nathan. I couldn't quite make out who was the first person.
This is Stan.
Hey, Stan. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Hanging in there.
Hello, Tracy's on the line.
Hi, Tracy.
Hey, Ram.
We're just waiting to get to quorum.
I guess these summer meetings are pretty sparse.
Hey, Hot, how's it going?
Not too bad. How are you?
Hanging in there. So I guess maybe we can get started. The main topics I had were, you know, closing out on the consensus thread. I sent out the, you know, we discussed it in our previous meeting, and then Nick and I had a working session, and we sent out the summary to the list. And so we need to talk about that as well. Tracy wanted to get some more information on the interface, so maybe we can discuss that as well, an interface to the interfaces to the conference layer. The other topic was the feedback to the requirements work group. So there was a request there. So that was the other topic. And the pending work item we have is, of course, the identity stuff. So I don't know how much time we have to go over all that, but that would be the rough order for the agenda I had in mind. Any other input, folks, on those topics?
Just on the first one. Also wanted to, maybe just look at the sequence diagram and see if that lined up with kind of the thinking as well.
Thanks, Tracy. Do we have Mick and Vin yet?
So I think Mick is on a plane. He emailed me this morning about the white paper meeting and said he would be on a plane. So
that's unfortunate. Anyone else has any input on that, on the agenda?
I think this gives us plenty to cover. So.
Plenty to cover, yes. And I guess let's take a crack at it, and then the rest of the stuff has to happen over email, I guess. So Stan, do you have any kind of thoughts on the text that we had?
So I think the description is really good, and the functional specification as well. So the process-wise, did we actually decide to stick to a specific flow, or as we discussed a couple, I think, sessions ago, try to define this in terms of dependencies versus a more like a prescriptive flow? The consensus process is approximately the same, but not exactly.
Can someone post a link to the document? Sorry, I'm on a computer that doesn't have work email access.
Just a second, let me do that.
Sorry about that.
I just posted, this is in the notes, and I just posted it on the Rocket Chat.
I can post it in chat in the Uber conference. There we go. Oh, okay. Different links.
Thanks. Sorry for the trouble.
So I think I've seen a picture somewhere, maybe lost in the email, where was it Mick who took a shot at the dependency graph?
So that was mine, I think, Stan, the sequence diagram.
Was it?
Let me send that link to in the chat.
Yeah, there were both, right? There was the one that you worked up, and then there was also the one that Mick had thrown together in those same conference calls.
Yeah, I think the one Mick had is further down from the 621 notes section.
Oh, right in the notes. Yep, I see.
So the way I was thinking about it was that it's the text on the functional specification is the important one, and the process and the flow, whatever we come up with, is just examples of how different implementations can have, right? So that's only that's not quite that's more informative rather than prescriptive, if you will. Right, that's the way I was thinking about it. And that's the challenge with the flow, is that, you know, people shouldn't interpret any one particular flow as something that we are kind of proposing as part of the functional specification, right? So that's the balance we need to figure out how to do. You know, one of the issues I have is that, you know, different schemes might depend on an external ordering service versus incorporate ordering into the rest of the consensus process. I think the functional requirement, is generic enough that it can be satisfied by different implementations which have an external ordering service or incorporate ordering as an integral part of the rest of the consensus, in a batch process. So, you know, I'm not sure we can come up with one flow which will satisfy those different implementations, right? So that's the question I had about, you know, how do we treat that something like a flow? That probably belongs in, let's say, we put out this functional specification and then say we come up with a design for an abstraction layer and then one specific implementation. Then a design flow for that specific implementation probably deserves that kind of level of detail. But would love to get everybody's thoughts in the group of how we want to treat that.
Well, I think
that was my thinking so far.
That sounds like the way to go. The I think as far as how to describe this in a document, I think. That idea, Mick's idea with the dependency graph is a really good one. So if we start with a functional description and then kind of define what we believe the modules are, then what the dependency between them, and then just like what you have in there, this is like an example of a process. Not a prescriptive, but just an idea of how one may put it together. And possibly we can also then have kind of each of the implementations specify how to do this, because there's that the discussion on the mail list was great, and this definition from Marco, I guess, about the external validity conditions.
Yeah,
we're kind of treating smart contracts as this external validator by default. Whereas
That aligns very well with how we think about dependency to the smart contract layer. So I think we just need to, with Marco, I don't know whether he joined today. I'm having some problems with the Uber conference. Let me get on the web. Is Marco on?
It doesn't look like it.
Yeah.
Okay. Did anyone read that paper?
I skimmed through it.
I mean, it wasn't, was it clear that kind of the external validity held, even if there was kind of a long dependency on other transactions? It seemed to, but I wanted someone who like actually had gone through the paper to confirm.
Sorry, can you repeat that? I'm not sure I got your question.
Just the definition of the external validity function is all. Whether it could take in like the entire previous blockchain as history.
But that's an internal. I think that was the whole point, that the way we're treating the validity check is to pass the transactions outside of the consensus layer or module, however you call it, and then get back the decision versus making the decisions based entirely within the scope of the consensus.
The paper was very skimpy about that. It just mentioned conceptually that you can have an external validator. They didn't go over details. In fact, when they talked about fault tolerance, they didn't talk about fault tolerance for that layer and so forth.
But I think Marco referenced, Christian's textbook for the actual definitions of that. It wasn't in that paper particularly, I think. You're talking about the blockchain consensus survey, right? Art?
No, I'm talking about the actual paper where they came up with a definition.
Oh, that one.
Let me link it.
There was no link to it, right? So, Crypto 01.
Yeah, it's that one. So they define it.
This is the 2001 paper. Okay, I have not read this stuff.
Yeah, so this is the one about the external validation. And these are kind of a bear to go through. So there's this whole thing about validated Byzantine agreement, right? So if you go to section 4 on page 26, right. So it depends on how they define the predicate. So the predicate has to be known to all parties, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So this would be the validation rules, right?
But this is the smart contract, right? So the smart contract obviously
belongs
to all parties.
But I'm not entirely sure if like if there can be. So suppose there's a smart contract, but that has like multiple inputs, and some people have gotten some of the inputs, and some people have gotten some other inputs, right? So it's not clear to me I guess I just need to go through this in more detail. It's not clear to me that some of the complicated like order dependent transactions go through for this. So clearly if your transactions are independent, then this works, right? Then it satisfies all the definitions of the predicate and everything. So
the proof is in the pudding, right? So in Fabric 1.0, they do have a post-ordering check. And that's what Christian, I don't know if either he sent it out to the list or only to Mick and I, but, you know, Christian acknowledged that the need for that post-validation, you know, post-ordering check.
Okay, so it doesn't satisfy this probably then.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, because the... this is pretty straightforward, right?
I pointed this out to Marco. We had this discussion, I think, a good year and a half ago when they first proposed the changes. That you know you needed that step. Before then, they did not have that post-validation check. We had this email discussion on the architecture thread, I think a good year ago.
Okay, so that's good. Then I think I understand if the external validity check doesn't fully handle the possible transaction dependencies, then I think I understand it.
Yeah, because I think the current implementation, Fabric 1.0, is that, you know, they do all the endorsement / simulation gives you the MVCC checks that's capturing the dependencies. And then there's ordering. In their case, it's a centralized ordering service. And then they have a post-ordering validity check to weed out dependencies. And they actually do it in a conservative way, in the sense that if there's an overlap in the MVCC, then they just reject the second transaction.
I mean, this would be interesting to, if they formally proved that this, can't fork.
I don't think they have done that.
Because, I mean, I'd be curious. I don't know as much about consensus as Christian or Marco. I'm just curious here.
Yeah. I think the original kind of approach is to treat the smart contract layer as deterministic and the original schemes don't seem to consider faults in that layer.
I wouldn't
be surprised if there are corner cases where you could have issues with failures in the smart contract layer.
Well, I'd be
in fact,
curious.
That was the point of
If you got something in a particularly if you had smart contracts with a ton of dependencies and you got them in a particularly pathological order, I don't know what will happen, right?
Right.
But yeah, as you point out. It seems like unless the proof pi can depend on the previous history, then it doesn't necessarily handle this. And I mean, I think all this is fairly new for consensus, right? Because traditionally they don't care about this stuff too much. It's all about ordering.
That's right. I mean, at least academic literature.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what we're talking about systems. Here. Yeah. We're talking about academic stuff. I don't know. I need to read more papers on this.
Coming down to our functional description, right? So I think the disagreement with Marco is just around semantics as far as our functional breakup goes, because the external validity service in some sense is the smart contract layer, and he sometimes conflates ordering with consensus and the way we've defined it, and that's because of the history of how it's treated, like you mentioned, Hart, in the academic research. But from a practical point of view, we've come to the conclusion, the architecture work group, that we should define consensus as both ordering and correctness of a committed block, right? So in that sense, if we just treat name ordering as an ordering service, and bin has been great at making sure that that's the way it's named in Fabric, then we are in alignment, and that you need to bring in the smart contract layer as the external validation. And then the end of the day, include whatever post-validation steps to make sure that there are no double spend transactions, as an example, which could lead to incorrectness in the state, then we are all on the same page. Does it make sense?
Yeah, I'm still curious what guarantees we can get in this case. It might be that having an external validity guarantee on the entire blockchain just means nothing works. Again, I don't know. I haven't spent decades devoted to consensus.
When I say external, all I mean is external to the consensus layer. I'm not sure. I'm not saying external to the entire blockchain.
Right. No. I'm agreeing. I'm just saying that kind of if you allow the transaction validity to depend on all of the previous transactions on the blockchain, right?
I don't think there's any problem if it depends on previously committed state, right? In a sense, if there is a confirmed block that you are depending on, then especially in the case where you know you assume there's finality on block commit, then that's not a problem. I guess where it gets complicated is what is the dependency on pending transactions?
But a lot of this stuff is kind of rolling back blocks, right? This is this like post-ordering check and kind of asking when can you have finality. I mean, that's kind of the key point in all of this is, right? Is obviously once you know you have finality, you're good to go. But when can you surely say we have finality, right?
Well, when you reach the consensus, right?
Yeah.
I think the one of the distinctions here is that what does a valid transaction really mean? So in case of Fabric with external endorsers, in a way, the actual conditions and the data used to validate the data or transactions are not public. They're not known to anybody. But the endorser provides the signature, basically casting their vote, saying that they believe it's valid. So that is presented, not necessarily the data used to reach the decision. Whereas sure. In a more typical smart contract, you know, globally replicated log way, the data is also available to everybody. And at that point, I think this description that we have actually work for both scenarios, because what does it mean that we reach consensus on validity? That means everybody who needed to agree on the validity agreed on it. The reasons why they agreed on it, they're kind of out of the scope. So it for the formal proof, whether the transactions are valid, I think it's impossible to do that. But it becomes much more practical in a way that if you're trying to implement the system and all the parties involved agree that this is sufficient for them to recognize the validity of the transaction, then it's accepted.
Yeah, so if you have that model, then everything's fine, right? Then you can just throw it into this external validity engine because your proof pie is concise. It's just a signature and your validity condition is very right. Simple as well, right?
Right.
So yeah. So if you do it this way, then kind of, you know, then everything just works.
It gets a little bit more complicated than that. At least if the way I understand the way Fabric 1.0 is doing is that now your post-validation checks is not just a signature but also conflict. Identification and resolution, right? In the sense that if you have overlapping MVCC sets, then they assume that that's a conflict and they toss out the one of them.
Yeah, right. And that's where it gets more complicated, and that's where I'm curious if I had like some kind of that's basically the step that I'm still curious about.
Yeah, and you know, I think at the end of the day, you're trying to figure out if there are dependencies between the pending transactions, right? And you know, there are multiple ways you can do that, but you have to identify dependencies, and if they're completely independent, then you're fine. If there are dependencies, then you need to kind of resolve them one way or the other, in a way that ensures correctness of the entire all the transactions in the block. And by just imposing the functional requirement, saying that, you know, you need consensus defined as agreement on the correct set of transactions and the order and the correctness, then we are saying, hey, whatever implementation you know, you have multiple ways of getting there, but you need to get to agreement on order and correctness of all the committed transactions.
Yeah, so I mean, it's this kind of point. Like you say, you have multiple ways to get there. I mean, this seems like it can get potentially arbitrarily complicated, right?
Correct.
I mean,
right? It depends on the implementation, right? the design and implementation. From a functional point of view, you know, we are saying, you know, you need to ensure correctness of as part of consensus.
I mean, I can do things like, you know, what if I embed like a 3-sat problem into my smart contract structure and like send some people transactions in an order where it's obvious that it's satisfiable and others in an order that it's like not obvious it's satisfiable. Is there a way this gets fixed?
Good question. The system has to make sure, you know, any specific implementation has to make sure that, you know, those are eliminated, right?
I mean, but it's, you can send 2 sets of orders, right? So
I can. Why not? If I control a network, if I'm a network adversary, like most of these protocols allow for,
if you control the network, if you're the leader, yeah.
No. Most of the formal protocols allow an adversary to like completely control every network node, right? Or every network link, not the nodes. So I can, in a truly adversarial model, right? I can do this, right? And I think the more powerful thing is if I send people, like, if I send one set of people a set of transactions that's not, that's hard, that should be rejected, but it's hard to decide to reject. And then I send another set, basically the same set of transactions, but with a witness for rejection.
Well, so I guess if you're talking about a PBF, a BFT algorithm, then it should have some mechanism to deal with those conditions, right? If you know, for instance, the Fabric 1.0 is not BFT right now because they're just using Kafka, which is not BFT tolerant.
But this kind of falls outside of the guarantees of BFT, right? BFT just guarantees people will agree on an order.
Well, I assume it also, it also has agreement on the value, right?
The value of what? I mean, it's just, I mean,
I guess
BFT just
you
says
can,
like,
you can abstract the all the content to some value, right? I mean,
right. I mean, the state, right? The final hash in the way in the blockchain, right? That's what you're agreeing to. But I still like, because there's a threshold in all the BFT protocol. If you are in total control of the network, yeah, the network doesn't work. There's still built-in mechanism to detect individually if you're not being controlled that this is happening, but you can't do anything about it.
Sure, but a viable BFT adversary can, right, delay things. So mm-hmm. I could, you know, as a BFT adversary, I could control one node, send a set of transactions to one set of nodes, send a set of transactions to another node, set of nodes, pause the communication in the middle so they can't propagate for a little while, then open it up and let them propagate, right? That would generally be allowed under all definitions of a BFT adversary.
Yes. But the consensus decision would not be reached, though. I mean, you can delay the detection. I mean,
right. So the nodes could eventually talk.
Right.
And I'm just curious, like, what kind of a long I guess to summarize, I'm just curious, like what the effects of a deep transaction dependency would have on kind of BFT, particularly if it was not simple.
Yeah. So, you know, Ahad, if you're trying to make the point that when we go to the smart contract as an external validator model for the consensus layer, we need to take that into account, in the threat model and make sure that, that is still truly BFT tolerant. I agree with you. So the question is, does that change anything that we are talking about here from a functional requirement between the consensus and the smart contract layer?
I guess I'm not really trying to make a point. I'm just curious. I just want to know the answer is all.
I think we need to capture that and say, hey, when we come up and, you know, this probably needs to be taken up, right? When we talk about the threat models, especially for BFT tolerance and so forth, we need to capture threat models which incorporate, failures and attack vectors through the smart contract layer in conjunction with the other typical, threat vectors considered in the academic research community, right?
So it'd probably be interesting, given that we have a sample flow, right? And we'll hopefully include more specific flows for Fabric and Sawtooth and Iroha. Would be great if we also added a discussion of these, basically these points, the ones that Hart is bringing up, all actual consensus properties. What does this flow give you, and what are the new potential attack vectors?
This is something that I've brought up, and I was hoping right now it's just the identity work group, but it used to be identity and security when we started, and I was hoping that they would take up the threat modeling and security analysis stuff, but someone needs to take and drive that to kind of build out how we do vulnerability analysis from the consensus protocol and the crypto aspects of it as well, right?
Yeah.
And so any new crypto consensus mechanisms need to be kind of looked at, analyzed, and, I think Marco and Christian were proposing academic peer review. I'm not sure that's the only answer, but, we need somebody who has the ability to do the analysis to kind of, I was leaning towards more, tapping into some security crypto consensus distributed systems, a panel of experts who can help us with that.
So Ram, I guess my question to you about that, I think people know where I fall on this, is how are we going to get access to a panel of crypto and security and consensus experts who are capable of reviewing this?
So I was hoping, and I've kind of alluded to this, that, the core infrastructure CII process supposedly has some set of experts that they tap into. And I'm sure we are not the only ones to propose new crypto through the open source community.
I'm pretty sure we're about the only, I'm going to disagree with you. I'm pretty sure we are about the only people to propose new crypto through the open source community. New crypto doesn't usually happen through open source. It happens basically, people write papers, kind of the papers percolate in review, and then someone else decides, hey, we should implement this. It's kind of like a long stack thing. It's rare.
Sure. It's not just academic community though, right? New crypto happens through the standards process, the NIST standards and other standards processes as well.
The NIST process is extremely heavily academic. I mean, they don't really accept, I mean, if you submit a thing to NIST, right? Mm-hmm. You, I mean, I know this. I mean, I'm going to submit a, like, you know, they have a post-quantum proposal that I'm helping some people out with. Yeah. But it really is, I mean, NIST is even slower than an academic committee, right? If you look at the SHA competition.
In some sense, the standards process is even more rigorous.
The SHA is like 6 or 7 years, right? Between submitting a proposal, and then they take several years really to analyze the proposal, where they invite all of these academic people to basically attack. And they expect your thing to survive for kind of like 5 years or so before they're willing to adopt it. So, I mean,
yeah,
this
and,
is
and that's probably the bar we need to get to if we want a true standard to emerge, and that's several years out, right? So right now we are in the experimental phase, is the way I think about it. So we probably need, and I was hoping the CII would be the means where we can try to tap into a panel. And,
I don't
you know,
think the CII has the resources to do like rigorous academic review.
Well, so let's push on finding out how we can get some amount of review done. I'm not sure we can rely just on the academic peer-reviewed academic thing, which is skewed towards publication, right? Its own dynamics.
It does, but I guess my thought on this is it's very, very hard to get a bunch of theory experts, which is who's going to be reviewing protocols, to go over a paper, particularly if they're not friends with the authors. Generally, the only time people will go over your paper for you is if you have, or your crypto system or your consensus, is if you have a personal relationship with them. That's the only way they'll kind of do it for fun or for free. So getting a group of these people to review this kind of thing is really difficult, because people get inundated with papers, right? And most of them are not good. So it's hard to convince people to do this. And kind of, you know, the advantage of the peer review system and the conference system is if you submit something, then they have to do it, right? You have a captive audience. And that's kind of the easiest way to force a group of experts to look at your paper. So that's kind of where I'm coming from on this. If people can find a way to get together, you know, kind of some panel of experts to review this stuff that's not in peer review and can be done faster,
yeah,
then that would be wonderful. But I'm kind of dubious that it can be done.
Maybe we can work with IC3. I mean, they are kind of a organization of the experts, at least in crypto and cryptocurrency space.
Yeah.
The other question I have there, Hart, is that a lot of us have been doing some of this type of academic writing and review, and we have contacts in this space. If we reviewed some of these papers and kind of distilled it down to just the greatest hits, so to speak, do you think that through the folks at Fabric and the folks at Intel that we would have enough context to maybe get one or two of these kinds of papers reviewed if we thought it was of exceptional quality or had more potential perhaps than some of the others that are out there?
I mean, my question then again would be, is it faster than actually submitting to a like peer review conference? If it's a paper of an exceptional quality, right, then it should breeze through these things and people will want to read it, right?
But if it's not breaking new ground for in terms of academic from an academic interest point of view, it might still not be accepted. You see what I mean? They have a different lens and criteria than what we would have, right?
So a lot of these things are very practical focused, right? Like if you don't break new theoretical ground, but you do something like inherently practical and useful that people are going to like, you know, there's still a segment of the academic community that will really like that. This kind of brings about the question, if we're not doing something innovative, then why don't we stick with existing solutions anyway?
I agree. This is Leonard. I would like to say that quantum computers and cryptographic standards are currently under review right now as we speak by various labs around the world, from Australia to the US and the UK. So cryptography, as we know today, is about to change because of the advent of quantum computers. And of course, there are some models in the lab. I think IBM already has one, a quantum computer, which you can try out. So literally, it stands currently reviewed now because of quantum physics. That having been said, coming back to consensus and the Auburn, we really should, as Stan says, look to put together a flow to help us clearly understand these dependencies. So as in all good code, we could then say we've done due diligence and we have a strong mapping as to how we understand these dependencies and what is the best process going forward as a standard process from an architectural perspective. I think that there's still a lot of merit in doing that. Thanks.
All right. So I'm not sure we're going to get to the, you know, we should probably take that topic offline about, you know, how we get the review done, right? And, you know, if we can get somehow, you know, either IC3 or through CII, a review panel, or if we can, you know, if we accept peer-reviewed academic publication, you know, either route is okay with me, but I'm not sure that I would rely just on one rather than the other. But anyway, I'm not sure, you know, we're going to resolve that here.
I mean, also,
bring it back to,
isn't the CII just kind of like you have the steps in place rather than, I mean, I wasn't aware that the CII would actually do like actual security reviews, do they?
Well, they claim to have security experts as part of the panel, but I don't know whether they're just providing you all, you know.
That is mostly self-certified.
Yeah. But, you know, it'll be worth, maybe we can have David kind of find out whether, you know, such a thing exists that we can tap into, or, you know, can we put in a proposal to get some help here specifically on these? But certainly I think we should push on that to see whether we can get some help here. Because they do claim to have a set of security experts as part of the CII initiative. Let me post the link here.
Yeah, I mean, I've looked at that, but I haven't really seen any kind of, you know, I guess I haven't seen anyone, you know, that would be able to involve that would be able to review stuff, I guess.
I suspect you're right, Hart. I mean, I think they're more coming up with the guidelines and the processes and so forth rather than actively reviewing stuff other than when bad stuff happens.
They're definitely experts in the best practice of security, which is great, which is what they're trying to do. But I mean, I think one of the CII questions is even like, are you using standard crypto and not like random stuff? So, I mean, I think one of the, like, some of the questions, if I recall correctly, in the badge specifically refer to like not using crypto you implemented yourself and things like that. So,
just to be clear,
well, and one of the difficulties that we're going to have around that is what does it mean to implement crypto yourself? For instance, if you're using the standard set of libraries for doing type 3 pairings, but you're doing something interesting or novel with those, a project maintainer might easily try to count that as using standard crypto but we need to have some definitions about what that means.
Yeah, you're exactly right. There's all kinds of ways you can potentially get yourself in trouble. So I don't think we have had too much of this. I mean, really, the only issue we kind of had was this last proposal, right? That kind of the patents ended up being the issue with. That was kind of the first instance of this. But I think we should probably have more checks in place. Because I know I spent a lot of time on that, and I think some others did too. And it's probably not sustainable in the long run.
Agreed, Hud. We should, and my point with the panel is that if we can get some help, we should. Let's just take an action item to kind of say, hey, let's flesh out if that's a feasible path to take, and we can tap into some resources that can help us with that. So at least put in a virtual team, maybe. If it is external to Hyperledger, then we need some help from the Linux Foundation to do that. If we want to do that as a work item within Hyperledger, then we need to figure out how to kind of get some serious help in terms of expert participation to do that. So can we come back to the main topic? So I think Tracy had the question about the flow. What do we want to do about the flow there? My concern was the way I was thinking about it, that the ordering service was part of consensus in the abstract definition, and the flow it gets pulled out as a separate entity, right? So that was one of the kind of concerns I had.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay. I mean, we can, if we change the ordering service in the thing to just say consensus, the consensus would be doing the ordering, and
you can almost treat ordering as a subcomponent of consensus, if you will, right? A dotted line or something around.
Okay.
It.
I mean, that's easy enough to do.
I mean, okay. Looking at the diagram, we just take it out. I mean, the flow remains exactly as we've described it.
Yeah, what you guys are proposing sounds good.
And if we do that, does the rest of the sequence diagram look correct? Based on what was suggested then? Or do we want to somehow combine smart contract and peers?
Can you post a link again so we can take a look at it?
Yep. So just post it in Uber conference, and here it goes to Rocket Chat.
I think it reflects the flow that's been described by Ram and Mick pretty well.
Yeah. So perhaps we can just, combine consensus and ordered service around a dotted line or something and call it consensus. Mm-hmm. And then, however we incorporate it, we should say that this is just one example, right? I think there was some, because there are different models, and for instance, just between Sawtooth and Fabric, they have different models completely. So
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, you can do a bunch of different you can do a bunch of, you know, slightly different stuff, right? You might want to, like, there's some obvious transaction rejections you might be able to do before kind of sending something to the ordering service. And some people might do that, and others might just send everything to the ordering service kind of first, right?
Right. And the other thing that's probably there to where we started this discussion was, you know, is there, you know, if you're describing something that looks closer to the fabric kind of flow, then, you know, do you need a post-ordering check to eliminate, you know, conflicting transactions?
Right, but I think this particular sequence diagram describes the flow that's in the document right now. So as we're saying that if we discuss, if include other flows, it makes sense to actually have additional sequence diagrams, maybe with the ordering service broken out into an explicit step because it's an explicit actor in other consensus flows.
I totally agree with that statement, Stan. This is one example, as Rand has said, and we can certainly look to depicting other flows, and Tracy certainly has provided us a lot of help in that area for the other, you might say, platform. So, no, very good start. I like that. Thank you.
I guess the next question is if, you know, can we get into an interface specification which allows the flexibility of implementations, you know, and that was, I think, the other set of questions that Tracy had, right? I mean, I think we are a little spotty in the current documentation. So I guess there is one set of, and really the other thing we probably have is that here it's showing client coming directly to consensus, and we have like a communications layer in between potentially, right, which is taking care of both client to peer as well as peer-to-peer communication.
I think this may be more of a naming thing. I mean, client doesn't necessarily have to mean client. It could be whatever the entity responsible for submitting the transactions, it could be the communications layer. But and as far as interfaces, I think this is where this dependency diagram would really specify which interfaces we define. It's kind of irrespective of the flow.
Right. We should at least make it independent of the flow, right, in terms of interfaces and dependencies.
Well, because I think dependencies is exactly what would drive the interfaces. Which interfaces we need.
Okay. Well, so unfortunately, we burned up the hour with our interesting discussions. So could a couple of you kind of help have a working session with Tracy, perhaps, to kind of flesh out this diagram a little bit more, Stan? Hot.
So just to let you guys know, Monday I started a 3.5-week vacation. So I was trying to get a lot of this accomplished for the paper that Greg has put together on consensus so that we could get that out maybe while I was gone. But, you know, that's kind of where we're at, is that paper is really, I think, just dependent on the interface portion of consensus, so that we can send that out. We've got all the information that exists. It's the link that Nathan had posted in Uber Conference. That's the current state of that document. Rom, I know we have a meeting on the calendar tomorrow to meet
Unfortunately, we'll have to reschedule that. I have a conflict that's come up. Let's shoot for Friday if that works for you.
Okay, sure.
All right. Thank you. I think We are coming up on the hour, so Hart's probably ready to take over. Stan, maybe Stan's gone, but maybe we can touch base with Stan to see whether we can get his input as well.
Okay.
Thanks, Tracy. Will you send out an invite to most of us? I'd like to attend on Friday. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks,
yes, have a good day, everyone. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.